welcome to Teachers Talking Tech. I'm Eric Robinson.
I'm Marie Larson.
Well, today we have the privilege of interviewing Andy Losick, and he's a teacher that I met through the Apple Distinguished Educator Program, and he's fabulous. And he has this idea he reached out to me about called the EdTech Breakup, and I don't want to tell too much because I don't want to ruin it, and he has some really great perspectives. I don't want to steal his thunder. So without further ado, let's get into it. All right, we're here with Andy Losick. He's an elementary STEM teacher in West Michigan. He's all about developing impactful student experiences focused on developing design thinking skills. He's also a former Michigan Technology Teacher of the Year and has been honored as both Google Certified Innovator and an ADE, or Apple Distinguished Educator. Welcome, Andy.
Hey, guys. It's great to get to join you on this podcast.
Well, we're happy to have you, man. You bring a perspective of, you know, you have a lot of experience. And,
Absolutely. Right. And I think the more perspective and more experiences we get, the better.
For sure. For sure. Well, we'll get right into this. Let's just get a little bit of your background. So how do you use technology in your classroom or in your STEM environment?
Well, we are our primary tool in STEM is the iPad, and it's just a perfect fit for our goal of kids exploring and kids going outside and documenting everything, because it's a portable device, but it's such an all-in-one studio when it comes to being able to express and document their learning, right? So, you know, maybe we go outside and we have a main goal. Kids are trying to find evidence of animal habitats on our playground. And so, you know, they can use the camera to take pictures of, oh, hey, there's a chewed acorn. Something was here eating that acorn, or there's a hole, or hey, there's a nest or whatever. And they can capture all that, and then we can put it into something like Keynote or get fancy with an iMovie or something like that. So, I mean, that's one way of doing that. And then the creativity of showing what they know and what they found. But then there's also the iPad works great for them to gain more knowledge. So maybe we're researching more about the birds that we found outside, or, you know, we do a lot with code.org and some of those things. And then what's really cool is when they're able to use those iPads and they're able to work with some of our Sphero robots that we have, and take that coding that they've done in code.org, and now it makes sense when they can actually control and make something like that. And so, you know, we try not to do tech for tech's sake. For 16 years, I was an elementary technology teacher, and I always tried to integrate it with what was going on in the regular classroom, but it was pretty tough. But STEM, so much easier to have, you know, specific, like we work off the next-gen science engineering standards. And so, it's just great to be able to go after and document all those steps that we're doing that way. Or if we also work with Project Wild curriculum, and some of those activities are really fun to insert a digital element with the iPads.
Okay, and what's Project Wild?
Kind of expand it that way.
What's Project Wild?
So Project Wild was developed by, I think, like the U.S. Forestry Service and a bunch of educators, and it's been around a long time. I mean, I remember my mom going to Project Wild. She was a early elementary teacher as I was growing up. I remember her going to stuff like that when I was in high school. And so then one of the first big PDs that I did as a new teacher in the early 90s was that. And so it's really about kids learning about their environment. A great example is a game called Oh Dear that you play, where you divide the kids up and you have a certain number. You have like six that start off as predator or as deer. And then the other half, they are going to mimic parts of habitat. So water, shelter, or food. And then the way it starts is you have the kids begin walking, and they're all going to choose either to be one of those pieces of the element. And before they start walking, the deer have to specify what they're looking for. And if a deer finds what they're looking for, so if somebody makes a symbol for water and they find another water, then that water piece becomes another deer and the deer reproduce. So you get reproduction without all the other stuff there. And it's cool because you
it's
can
a good way to
you
intro
can track.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's our sex ed. That's basically what sex
kid
ed
friendly.
Curriculum.
Yeah, kid friendly. Well, I was gonna say you're totally speaking Marie's language anytime you get to like using technology outdoors.
Yes.
Marie loves that. So well let's
what's cool is you can then track, like you keep track of the numbers. So like you start off with 6 deer and they all easily found what you're looking for. So now you're up to 12 and then you run another round. And if a deer can't find what they're looking for, they die. And the kids love to die, you know, mimic dying as well.
Dramatically.
And so maybe it goes 6 to 12 to 8 and then you have a big dip and then you can introduce something like a drought and all that. And so it shows carrying capacity and stuff like that. But it's a free curriculum. And it's full of all kinds of little pieces of environmental science that way.
Nice.
Cool. Very cool. How about what are some of your favorite tech tools?
Well, I mentioned it. I can't go more than a couple sentences without mentioning Keynote. But Keynote for me by Apple on the iPad is, and I get in arguments all the time with people like this. Keynote is the number one app for me on the iPad because there's so much you can do with it beyond making presentations. It's just not Apple's version of PowerPoint that way. It's just so easy for kids to organize, bring in pictures, make collages. You can animate on it. You can do a lot of things like that. And so just a great creativity tool when you get into like the animation effects and things like that. And we have our kindergartners, they're learning how to animate with the Magic Move effect, like right away. And so, I mean, it can just do so much. But I know there are a lot of people that don't have iPads and don't have access to Macs. I mean, Chromebooks, it's amazing how far Chromebooks are exceeding what Microsoft and Apple are shipping to classrooms. And so I love a lot of the creativity tools that are Chrome-based. So things like Adobe Spark, Canva, LunaPix, things like that let kids still be creative with the Chromebook. They're not just using it as an accelerated reader machine or something like that. But then what's cool is, like I mentioned Spheros too, is like if you can get into some of these things like Sphero robots or the AirParrot drones that you can do with block coding. I mean, it just becomes super powerful for the kids to be able to you know, actually control something through coding. They see an actual need for computer science beyond just some school sanctioned gaming level is, you know, what it often becomes.
Right.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
And I was like, I think we've been talking so much more as how tech can be used creatively as a creative, you know, tool.
Yeah, and I think that's a great segue right into this idea of the EdTech breakup. And that was one of the reasons that I wanted to interview you, Andy, is because even though, like Marie, like me, you can see all of the possibilities with technology, you're not afraid to ask hard questions about how much is enough or too much, or how are we using it correctly? Mm-hmm. And that's what I really wanted to get your perspective about that. So tell us a little bit about what do you mean by the EdTech breakup and kind of what are your thoughts?
Well, it seems like it was around the fall. I saw a lot of people on social media that have been heavily involved with educational technology, you know, kind of throwing their arms up and in a knee-jerk reaction saying, I'm having an EdTech breakup. I'm done with technology. It's mm-hmm. it's robbing me of everything. It's robbing my kids of everything. I'm done. Everything digital, everything analog. And, you know, I get that feeling of saturation. Seems like the last 15 years have been this tool, this tool, this tool, do yeah. this, do this, mm-hmm. do this. And then you get these, and then you get like, there's almost like this social media peer pressure that if you ain't got the Flipgrid fever, then you might as well be marked.
Right, if you're not using and trying everything.
And not to rip on Flipgrid. Rip on Flipgrid, because they're not doing it. But it's like people become so passionate about these things that, like, man, you're not down with that tool, then you're doing your kids a real disservice, and you're doing the ed tech world a disservice, and man, you don't even belong, you know, on Twitter or whatever.
And it can be overwhelming getting all this stuff at once and feeling like you need to use it all.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and there's always this feeling like oh, I'll never be caught up, and I'll never know as much as Eric Robinson, and I'll never know.
No one will.
You know, no one. Well, and I'm not sure that's all bad, but. But just teasing you, man. You know,
me too.
our toolbox has gotten too heavy to really carry around. And so for me, you know, it made me think. It's kind of like a pulling back. And it goes back to what I hope we're using the iPads for in STEM. Like, have a purpose. Technology should amplify great teaching, period. Great learning that way. Give kids more access to primary sources, give them, you know, the ability to show their work far beyond what they've ever been able to do. And so it's just that idea of balance. But on the other hand, I do see some detrimental effects that I do attribute to too much screen time, too much technology in the hands of our kids too early. And like things like fine motor skills are just terrible. Like, I get out the scissors and glue and construction paper as much as I possibly can with especially our little kids. The other thing is I have an early childhood degree and background. And when I was in college at Hillsdale, we had, and they still have, it's going to celebrate 90 years coming up. They have an on-site preschool that was really the hook that got me into education. And the thing is, we would see very specific developmental stages of play. So we'd start off like our 3 and early 4-year-olds, you know, they play kind of side by side, parallel. And then as they get older and they get more comfortable with each other and things, now they're starting to do more cooperative play. And then as they get to the end of their time there, 5 years old, getting ready to go to kindergarten, you know, they're getting super creative with it. They're being dramatic, you know, doing dramatic play with it, and they're assigning each other roles, and they're assuming roles and abilities and all these things. But now when I watch my 5 to 7-year-olds, so my first graders, my even some, you know, kindergarten, first graders, even some parts of second grade, and we're doing things in STEM, like I just have the Legos out and I have the Lincoln Logs out, and you know, it's just building time, and I see them still in their 3-year-old side, like what I used to see the 3-year-olds, you know, just everything side by side. It's rarely interactive that way, and it's easy to kind of go and look at the way that they normally play, where it's not a one-to-one learning environment, it's a one-to-one living environment that our kids are growing up, where, you know, a kid has a phone or they have an iPad or whatever, and everything is siloed in there. And so I try to break that up as much as I can when they come to STEM. And the other thing my teaching partner and I, we laugh about this almost, but you can see like this dopamine reaction kick in when I give them the iPads. And we used to have this Lego game that I put on because I thought, hey, great for creatively building with Lego. Well, it wasn't a Lego themed video game where they went around and they picked up these like little bricks or something like that. And if we would let our young fives or kindergartners play the Lego game, it was like they had all just like, I can't even appropriately describe what their reaction was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like we had just given them something illicit and they were just like, and you know, just like this huge reaction would come over their faces, and they would just be like all high on these endorphins from it. And I'm like, can't do that, you know, because they need to see these things as learning tools. I mean, they can have fun with them, and hopefully the learning that we're doing is tremendously fun with them. But I mean, just like all those things bundled together, I'm like, yeah, I do need to pull on how much technology we're using and making sure that it's, you know, it's in its place. And that the learning is the big thing, right? The other easy thing, like with STEM, where we have Spheros and we have iPads and we have all these things, is it's really easy to let that hour just become indoor recess. And so, you know, they're all playing and having fun, and yeah, they're learning about that. But I kind of pulled back on that a little bit. And after our first year of the program, we'll be going into our fourth year now, in the fall. And so kind of the second year is like, whoa, I got to make sure that I'm really getting science involved in these activities. Yes, they're good activities, but let's drill down and make sure we know exactly, you know, what the scientific elements are behind what we're doing here.
Well, I think that it's really refreshing, you know, to hear your perspective, because I feel like there are people who are very innovative and really want to push the boundary or the boundaries. And unfortunately, as like digital pioneers, we're going to make some mistakes. And I feel like you said, when you have 100 different tools you've been shown, you feel like unless you're using those all the time, you're wasting your kids' time. And not only that, you feel like, wow, my district spent $200,000 on these iPads.
Right.
And...
Mm-hmm.
Right, we should be using them all the time. You know what I mean? I think in finding that balance between technology, creativity, the hands-on. I mean, I totally agree with you with the fine motor skills.
Yeah, we noticed that. And I also totally noticed, because we were not one-to-one originally at our school. And we switched from, I think we had, you know, about 8 iPads. So about 3 kids would share an iPad. And one of the things that I noticed when we went to one-to-one is it did, like you explained, there's silos where each kid is in their own little world and there's not that collaboration.
And that cooperation piece of sharing the device because they all have their own.
Well, it's almost making me rethink how I have my devices in my room, right? Because in our rooms, at our school, we're 1-to-1 K-2. And so, first of all, the kids see that it's their iPad, which can be an issue with how they care for it and really, in reality, how sneaky they are on it.
Yes.
But then on top of that, you know, I found that there were some limitations of not having one-to-one, but I really love that the kids saw it more as a collaborative tool that they used on their own every once in a while rather than just my iPad that I go in my corner and do my thing.
Right.
Yeah. So
having it there as a tool... Oh, I'm going to go get the iPad because I bet we can find out what we need to know that way. Or let's take a picture of this and then let's diagram it this way.
Yeah.
Like a perfect example of that is in first grade, our classes get caterpillars, and then they raise them on milkweed, and then eventually, if all goes well, they'll form a chrysalis and hatch, and then they take them out and release the butterflies. And traditionally, that unit's been done in first grade with just this paper journal and workbook where the kids would draw what's going on there. And so Christy Zorhoff, first grade teacher at Bentheim Elementary, and I, we said, what if we did this with a tablet? What if they were taking digital pictures and they were annotating digitally on Sketch what they were seeing every day? And then I think we put it in PicCollage. And they were, this is when we were test driving some Android tablets with Sony. And so we didn't have Keynote, but we put it in PicCollage, and they built a book. Book Creator would be a great tool to do it too. And so what they did is they digitally built that journal as opposed to what they had scratched out previously. And it was just a great way to, here's a tool that I can use to document my learning better as opposed to, this is my tablet, and I'm just going to sit over here, and like you said, sit in the corner. I'm going to sit at my desk, and I'm just going to zoned in on this thing. They just went and got that when they needed it to do that documentation. Then they put it away, and then their eyes went back to observing and watching the caterpillars and all that stuff.
But that's a perfect integration of using it as a tool
to
help with your science project.
Yep.
Well, and I think that there's multiple tools to help teachers when they're kind of reflecting on the use. There's like the SAMR model, which if you want to Google it, is just SAMR, and it kind of shows different levels of depth and breadth that you're getting from technology and where you should be. And there's another one called the Triple E framework, which is by Dr. Liz Kolb, which is also where you, it's a whole system where you can basically put in point values for a certain app or tool, and then it will give you a score and tell you it, within that score, whether this tool is necessary or is it just window dressing, because it is so easy to fall into that window dressing, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the, especially in the classroom environment now where testing is king, even down to kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much pressure on teachers where it's like, hey, I've got this tool. It'll teach your kid at their level. Then when they're done, it'll test them out. And so they're all prepared for the test, where that's, in my opinion, probably the worst use of technology there is,
mm-hmm.
right? It's just, you know, it's just recycling old teaching pedagogy, but using a digital device instead of a teacher teaching.
Well, and teach, I mean, and selling it as an innovative use of technology.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, well, you know, it's, again, it's really refreshing to hear these things. I mean, you know, coming from you, Andy, somebody who has definitely gotten accolades for their tech use, somebody who is always into using technology with their kids when it's appropriate, I think it's important for someone, you know, for people to hear from someone like you, like, hey, I am still reflecting on all the things that I'm doing, and I love technology, but it's not the right thing. Just like, you know, not maybe a bad parallel, but I love ice cream.
Yes.
See where I'm going with that, you know?
But I think refreshing, too, to think that you are reflecting on the same questions we are.
Yes.
Like, is the tech we're using meaningful? Is it harming our kids? Is it helping our kids?
Yeah.
And that all of us are thinking those same things.
And remembering that Apple and Google, although they have good intentions, are companies that are selling you products.
Exactly.
And to always keep that in mind when you hear about the next, you know, next big thing, that these are companies all trying to, make money.
And I think not to downplay all of the great work that, you know, you're already doing with the things that you have. You don't always need the next app, the next big thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, and one of the things also I've realized is the importance of repetition, right? It's it's like, we'll do, like, people might come by the STEM room like, oh man, you guys are doing the zip line again. But giving kids the opportunity to learn in an activity, and then give them a chance to go back and get and do it again and try it again. So real quick, what we do with a zip line, it's like the dumbest, easiest thing I ever created in STEM, was I just run fish line from one end of the room at an angle to the other end of the room and put out all the Legos, and they have to create a vehicle that can go down the zip line. And so as they get older, I give them tasks like, all right, who can transport safely 10 marbles, right? And they just love it, and it just goes through that whole design process. I get an idea, I come up with something, I build it, I try it out, I test it, I go fix it, right? And so we do that, you know, probably once a month, because they learn so much about what worked and what didn't in that one session. But I want them to have another opportunity where they can start with where they were at the end of day one, as opposed to, you know, it just being like, all right, this was just a one and done kind of thing that way. And I think that translates really well to like vocabulary and math facts and all those other little things where, you know, do less but do it more often kind of that way. And tech can be helpful that way, and tech can kind of get in the way that way as well.
Yeah, but just hearing you, Andy, it makes me think about so many things that I would like to change in my own classroom. And they're tweaks. They're things that, like you said, it's, you know, we all have had that friend that's like, I'm quitting Facebook, you know?
Yeah. And, good, thanks.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, bye. But
we'll see you in a month.
Yeah, that's right. See you back here in a little bit. But it is that whole, the knee-jerk reaction to just say, like, you know, there's all this stuff out there that's kind of fake where it'll say, like, well, one of the big ones is Steve Jobs never would let his kids ever use technology. And that's just not true. And there's a lot of things out there where people are scared that they're giving their kids too much technology and that it's somehow going to ruin them. Where I think the reality lies somewhere in the middle. Kids need to be exposed to technology. They can't enter school and they can't.
It's not going anywhere.
Right, exactly. Right? Yeah, they can't walk into your classroom and all of a sudden they're in 1950. But at the same time, I see myself right now. We started out with like 80 apps, you know, on our iPads 3 or 4 years ago, and now we're down to like 40. I would love to try to get it down to like 8 to 10 apps.
I think there's like a core 5 that.
Right.
I think about I use on a daily or weekly basis.
Yeah. Well, it would force you when it was that like the rainy day. It would force you as the teacher to never be like, oh, that's all good. You can go ahead and do that app as indoor recess. And you would never say like, oh, man, I need another station for math. I don't know what to do. Ah, just do Math Fact Blaster or whatever it is. It would really force you as the teacher to never just fall back on your, you know, on the comfortability of just saying, you know, go in that, and like you were saying, in your silo and you know, see you in a half an hour.
And then on the days you need that, it's very special because there are days we need that, right?
That's for sure.
We can actually use Bridge Constructor today? Awesome. Great.
But then it's novel, right?
That's right.
We work off, you know, some just a small set, and that was like one of the first things I had to do was to go into the STEM iPads and get rid of that. So totally. Like that Lego game I was telling you about. Because year two, the kids came back and they're like, where's that Lego game? I'm like, it was garbage. It's gone. Not using that. Play that at home.
We're done. So,
yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much, Andy.
Hey, great to join you guys. Great way to spend a little bit of my morning today. Love summer that way.
For sure. All right, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right, you guys. Take care. Thanks a lot.
You too. Thanks.
Right. Bye-bye. Well, once again, thanks for joining us. That was a great interview with Andy.
So good to hear the always good to hear the perspective of other teachers.
For sure. So some of the things we were talking about, I'll slow down and just tell you some of these resources. So he had been talking about Chromebook, things he loved to use. And he was talking about the Adobe Spark Suite. Mm-hmm. And if you just Google that, you can see what those are. Great tools for Chromebook, and also Book Creator was another one.
Spheros,
I think, yeah, at code.org.
Code.org.
All great for Chromebooks. And then for iPad, he was also talking about Book Creator. He talked about one called Sketch and PicCollage, which are very similar. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of newer tools probably since they had done that. But if you want to check out Sketch, it's kind of like you can put in images, and then you can add arrows and annotate them and things like that. PicCollage is similar too.
And Keynote. I'm like determined to try to use Keynote next year.
My kids, honestly,
you use it quite a bit. Yeah, I always think it's not appropriate, but it sounds like it's amazing.
Yeah, well, in kids, it's very intuitive. That's good. It really is. My kids just asked, like, can we check this out on our own? I was like, yeah. And they started using it as another presentation tool.
Yeah, which is another great option.
Yeah, which is awesome. So the two things that you can use to go back and reflect on whether or not you should be using tech, one of them is the SAMR model. Mm-hmm. So if you just type in SAMR model, then you'll see a picture of it. It's very self-explanatory when you see the image that'll come up. And then the second one is the EEE framework by Liz Kolb, K-O-L-B. And if you Google EEE framework, that'll come up. It'll go to our website. She has a book, but there's also some great tools to reflect on your technology. So hopefully those are helpful. All right. Well, thanks again for listening. And this is Eric Robinson.
And Marie Larson.
See ya.